Greetings, beautiful spirits, gladiators, success farmers. Welcome to another episode of Good Gas Mondays with me, Crystal Tomlinson. I'm an author of the book Kill Fear, The Art of Courageous Living, and I'm also the head coach at the Success Farm Life Academy, where I help millennials, mothers, entrepreneurs, and ambitious spirits like you to develop clarity and courage to achieve their goals. I'm also a mother, an entrepreneur, a speaker, a political leader, and a Jamaican. That's right, I'm from the 876, and it's my pleasure to have you tuned in. If this is your first time, welcome to the gas pump. We're going to be topping you up with powerful conversations that give you the spiritual stamina to take action and reap the sweet fruits of success in your professional and personal life. So before we jump into today's episode, I want you to do me a quick favor. It only takes 30 seconds or less. If you are fueled by our conversations here, I want you to go ahead and drop a rating wherever you're listening to this podcast. If you're feeling super charitable, you can also drop us a comment to review the podcast. It helps Apple, Google, Stitcher, Anchor to know that this is good stuff, and it ensures that more people will know we exist so they can join us over in this corner of light. So in advance, I'm saying thank you for that. Now, today we're talking relationships and COVID-19. No matter where you are in the world, by now, you must know that phrase. You've heard about the coronavirus, its genesis in Wuhan, China, and its subsequent spread. The World Health Organization has now titled it as a pandemic. So you're hearing a lot of news about COVID-19, what to do, what not to do, and some jokes around what will happen as a consequence of that.
A lot of people are making jokes about how many babies are going to be born, and we're going to call them COVIDians and Coronians and whatever this new generation of children will be named, because we're all holed up inside, men and women, together, we are bound to impregnate somebody. And I realized that there's also some interesting data floating around, not about how many people are born after crises, but how many relationships simply don't survive. And it's not because you have not found your soulmate. It's not because you don't love the person you're with. It's not because you were married to the devil, but you didn't realize it until you were in the house with them for 14 days. A lot of it has to do with our failure to nurture and service our intimate partner relationships in a way that allow them to grow beyond where they're at. Now, just like a car, if you don't service it, no matter how fantastic the car is, and high-end and pretty and gorgeous and useful and fast, if you're not servicing it, you won't get the best out of it at all times. And you have to take that kind of approach to your love life. You know, don't take it for granted that because last month you were swooning over each other and head over heels in love on the wedding day or when you had your first date, that's just going to last forever and ever and ever. It doesn't work like that. So if you're not nurturing your relationship, doing the positive work that needs to be going into it, just like a plant that you have to water and give it sunlight and check to see if any insects are eating off what they don't want it to eat off, and if the positioning is right, and if it's growing the right way, and if the stems are nice and tall, and the roots are firmly on the ground, and all the things you have to do, if you have a green thumb. I don't, but if you have one, you know what it takes to properly nurture your garden. Your relationships, all of them, intimate partner relationships, friendships, relationship with your children, with your co-workers and your bosses, anywhere you have to deal with people, you have to constantly nurture that. And I'm going to walk through how you know when you're not nurturing it properly and what you can do to just grab things and get them back on course. But the first thing I want you to accept is that your relationship is unique, it is different, and there's some things that I'm going to share today that don't necessarily relate to you, and you probably can't make use of this kind of content. And you know, I don't want you to think that this is like a playbook, and if you do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you'll never have conflict again. Or that every single element of conflict is going to be related to your relationship. It's not that simple, and I'm not going to pretend that it's that simple. But there are some basic tools that we can put to use to improve our love lives, or deepen the love, as I put it here. And some key strategies that everybody needs if we're going to manage and resolve conflict in a way that builds the relationship instead of breaking it apart. So, gonna pause for like 10 seconds, allow you to whip out a piece of paper and pen, and I encourage that because you're gonna be watching your phone. So I don't think some people to take the notes on your phone. So pause for a little bit, grab a piece of paper and a pen or pencil, a notebook, whatever it is you take life notes on. I pray you're taking life notes because we learn from the journey. And we're gonna go through some of these. And when I ask you to stop and reflect, you just make, you know, a note on your paper what you're learning and what is relevant to you. So 10 seconds. Okay, so as I said, we're looking at two things: how to deepen the love in the relationship, because you're going to be spending a lot of time indoors, and don't think that all time spent together is quality time. That's a big relationship myth, that if we're around each other a lot, it means that we're spending time together. You can be in the house and not speaking to each other, in the house not interacting at all. Somebody upstairs, the other person downstairs. Somebody watching TV, the other person is out on the back veranda or the porch or something, doing whatever the activity is that they're engaged in. And there is no actual connection and relating to each other, except when you pass and grumble like a good morning, or a good night, or a woman, I'm hungry, or where I cook, or you couldn't put on the toilet seat. Those things aren't elements of a relationship. So if you are at home with your partner, you're going to have to be doing things that strengthen that bond, right? And deepen the love in the relationship. And I have three R's that I like to recommend. Again, you can add to this list if you want to. You may have other things that you're doing that work. Feel free to drop it in the comments so everybody else on the live can just get the benefit of our collective wisdom. But I'm just recommending three of the things that actually work through emotional intelligence research. One of the places I go to get my human emotion research is the Greater Good Science Center coming out of UC Berkeley. So I got certification there in the science of happiness, and I really am rooted in that institution because they do constant research around human beings or emotions or relationships, intimate and non-intimate ones. So based on some of the data coming out of the Greater Good Science Center, there are three R's that work well. Again, not exclusively, but if you put them together along with any other healthy relationship routine, you should see the benefit of it. So the first R is to reflect. It's very important to remind yourself why you are with the person you're with. Stop, and you can probably write on a piece of paper, why do I love this person? Why am I in this relationship with this person? What are the needs that I have in this relationship that I think this partner would have been the best partner to help me fulfill those needs? Now, here's the big surprise for a lot of us. We are in relationships with people and we just don't know what we want, what we expect, what our relationship needs are. We just know that in Jamaican parlance, you must date with smaddy. You and smaddy must date. As part of adulthood, as part of adulting, you have to be with a somebody. And depending on your sexual orientation, you pick the somebody and then you insist that the mere fact that you're together means you have a relationship. You did not explore independently, what needs do I have in a relationship? What am I looking for in a partner? No, I'm not saying what you're looking for on a partner, like how them skin complexions to you, whether them have acne, whether it's a Rastaman or a Bali, whether she wear weave or she have natural hair, whether it's brown skin or dark skin or white, or straight nose or big eye or whatever it is. That's not what I'm talking about, because that is the easiest component to check off a list, what somebody looks like. But what do you need from a relationship? Emotionally, socially, financially, what are the needs you have in a relationship? So let's give you an example now. You meet someone and you're deciding whether or not you want to date, as we would say in Jamaica. You want to form a relationship. You could be asking yourself, what do I want in a relationship? Well, I'm looking for something stable. I'm looking for someone who is monogamous and in another few years would be interested in getting married. I'm looking for someone who I can start a family with in Jamaica. Or I'm looking for someone who is a bit of a nomad because my spirit pulls me to travel. So I want to find someone who is open to seeing the world with me. Those are your needs in a relationship. I don't want to feel anchored. I don't want to feel like I'm stuck in one place. I want someone who I can see the world with maybe once a year, twice a year. No, if that is a need, a strong component, and needs are things we think we can't live without. So if you think you cannot live without being in a relationship with a partner who is a Christian, a partner who is Jamaican, a partner who travels the world, whatever the need is that you have, establish that internally. And then also communicate that clearly to whoever you're joining in a partnership or relationship. Ask them questions. What do you believe? What is your religious disposition? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? Ask those questions. What are your views on financial management and pension and saving and investment? Ask those things. Now, depending on the church that you belong to, you may have an opportunity for marriage counseling when it gets to that. But marriage is really way down the line. So, or depending on where your line is, the fact is marriage is actually across a particular line. But before you get to that line, you may want to establish some things in your early part of the relationship. What do you enjoy? What do you dislike? What will you not suffer or stand for the sake of love? You have to be clear on that with yourself. And once you're clear on that with yourself, you can communicate that with your partner. And then as the relationship is forming, you can say, I'm choosing this person because the needs I have in a relationship, they meet them. And I love how they enjoy the beach because I enjoy the beach. I love how when we're in this discussion around politics or religion or the fiscal markets globally or ants or dirt or marine life, how they get what I'm saying and they're so excited about what I'm excited about. And even where we have differences, boy, it's just so fun to learn what their differences are. Establish why you're going to be in a relationship with that person. Having done that, and you're trying to now maintain and sustain a healthy love life, you're trying to figure out how to deepen the love, reflect on why you're with this person in the first place. You can write that down, because some of us have forgotten. Some of us probably didn't even commit that to pen and paper to determine why you are in this relationship. So you have an opportunity as you're in the home with your COVID-19 relationship. No, the dynamics have changed. You may need to remind yourself, why do I love her? Why do I love him? Why am I in this relationship? Why are we together? Why am I not going to break up with this person tomorrow morning? Because you're going to need to know that if you're going to resolve conflict in a healthy way. You must be clear on the future of the relationship. Because if you don't see a future, there is no way to resolve the conflict in a way that builds up a good relationship and sustains it over the long term. So reflect, write it down, think about it, journal it, script it on a piece of paper. And you also have the beautiful opportunity of sharing that with your partner. Before the conflict starts, you don't have to wait until the relationship is in trouble to reflect on something and communicate that with your partner. That, listen, I'm just remembering our first date and how I fell in love with you. And I'm just remembering that first time we, whatever it is. Write down why this relationship is important, why this person is such a beautiful partner for you, and why you want to sustain and remain in this relationship. And if you have an opportunity to do it, and we all have an opportunity as long as the person is alive, communicate that to your partner. Let them know. Because some of us, having not known or established that, definitely did not communicate it to our partner. And they need reassurance and affirmation just like we do. So share that with your partner. The second R is around release. Now, this release speaks to whatever grudges, whatever bad feeling, whatever unforgiveness you're carrying in your spirit regarding your partner. Maybe they did something that you didn't like or failed to do something that you were expecting them to do, and you really haven't forgiven them for what has hurt you. You're still carrying around a lot of anger, a lot of resentment, and you just have not let it go. Maybe you're even carrying around fears about whether or not you are appropriate for them. You know, do you think you meet all their needs and all their requirements for a relationship? And you're doubting who you are in your relationship. Maybe you have conversations with yourself that convince you of things that simply are not so. Whatever it is, you have to learn to release that if you're going to deal the love with your partner. So again, try to write those things down. You can write it on a piece of paper and literally burn it, symbolically communicate to your brain, in your memory, that you have burned those fears and you have burned that resentment and you have burned that quality of unforgiveness that has prevented you from communicating with them, prevented you from telling them the truth about what you feel and what you need. Write it down. I encourage writing it down because it triggers something in your brain and burn it, or send it off in a bottle on the ocean, or throw it up in the air and it will be carried where it wants to carry it, buried deep underground somewhere so that the paper disintegrates after a few years. You can choose how you want to release that, but that's something that is very personal. And there's no way you get to a space of a deepened love connection if you are still carrying around a lot of baggage, a lot of distrust, a lot of fear and unforgiveness in your relationship. So that's critical and that's important. The third R is romance. Now, clearly, you can't expect to sustain a loving relationship if there's nothing romantic about it. Now, romance doesn't have to settle on just sexual interactions or exchanges. You can be romantic with how you prepare a meal. You can be romantic with how you're smelling as you're passing your partner. You can be romantic for some women if you spread the bed, right? Those things are attractive depending on what the love language of your partner is. So that's a completely different conversation, but if you have a chance, if you're curious about finding out what your love language is, what your partner's love language is, and how you can communicate to each other in the ways that each will understand that this is love my partner is expressing, I'm encouraging you to read a book, and that book is called The Five Love Languages. So, for example, some persons will have as their love language gifts. They like to get things. It can be a letter. It can be a flower. It can be anything random, just something that is mine, something that you thought about, packaged or thoughtfully laid out for me, and gave me. And every time you give me something, I remember that you're telling me that you love me. But other people, their love language can be words of affirmation. So when you say beautiful things to them, oh my gosh, honey, you're looking so hunky and sexy today. I love that shirt on you. Or I love you in that skirt, girl. Whatever it is you have to say to affirm to your partner, if that is their love language, you have to figure it out and say it. So it's important that you know what your love language is. If it's quality time, people love to spend time together. If you're not spending time with me, no matter how much gifts you buy me, no matter how much compliments you give me, if we don't spend time together, I don't feel like I am loved. And a lot of us either don't know what our love language is, or we don't even know what our partner's love language is. So we can't communicate love in a way that they understand and register as a loving action. So one of the things I also want to make mention of, even as you think about this question of romance, is that you and your partner can have different love languages. So let's say your partner enjoys the gift giving or the gift receiving. They like to get gifts. And so they think that when they give somebody a gift, the other person loves it just as much as they love getting it, when the other person really just values quality time. So I'll buy you a gift because you love getting gifts and you get so excited and happy and pleased when you get a gift. But it don't mean that I want you to also buy me a gift. My love language is quality time, for example. So I expect you to spend quality time with me. But that's a whole other lie. We had covered it maybe like 2 years ago. We just started with guests on this. So I'm not going to jump into it right now. We'll explore it later on in the year if you want some more information on it. And I'll check the comments to see what the interest is in love languages. But suffice to say, you have to find ways to show your romance, show that you're still attracted to your partner, and show that you still want them in a loving way. Now, one of the things that I recommend as a standard feature and structured component of a relationship is dedicated us time spent together for just me and you. You can decide what you want to do with that time. For many couples, that's the infamous date night where we go out and we do things together. With COVID-19, there's a lot of places that's going to be closed. Restrictions around the world about where you can go and how many of you can be in X place at the same time. So what I would recommend, if you are wondering how to rejig your date night, is to figure out what you can do at home. Maybe having dinner together on the veranda, on the back porch, spreading a towel or a sheet out in the yard, and having a picnic at, let me not say lunchtime, when the sun is going to be really hot. So probably around 3-4 in the afternoon, when the sun is about to go down, it's not so hot, you can sit out and have a picnic together. Maybe you can decide that your date night is going to be a nice romantic bubble bath or an Epsom salt bath, or you're going to give each other a massage. So you're going to look on YouTube how to give sensual massages and buy your oil from the day before and use whatever you have in the house to create a romantic experience. So still select a day if you don't already have a day for your date night, and identify what you could do while you're at home, cooking dinner, having wine, watching a movie, cuddling up under the covers super early and sharing stories and reflections and feelings and whatever it is that you and your partner would enjoy doing together while at home. Dedicate a day to date night and to elevating and deepening that feeling of romance. Another thing you can do to add some spontaneity to it is to create a romance jar. And each person gets to write in a romantic fantasy. Now again, those fantasies don't have to be sexual, but I'm almost sure that you're gonna have a few of those dropped in the jar. So tell your partner that you will create a jar. It can be a mason jar, it can be a foam cup, it can be a drawer that is in your bedroom. You don't have to go too fancy, but you can still make your craft item at home so it looks sexy and special with a bow around it and some sprinkles and whatever you want to do, sparkles, anything that makes it feel nicer for both of you. Create that date jar, create that romance jar, and tell each person that they can add 10 things to it. 10 of their deepest desires or their romantic fantasies or something they would really enjoy doing that you could do from home, write it in there. And whenever it's date night, you do what you're doing, whether it's dinner, your picnic, a wine, a movie, whatever. And then just before bed, dip into the jar and see what that person has as something that they would love. So drop all the ideas in one jar and you take turns just going in week after week and just picking out what we want to do. Oh, who wrote this? This is whatever it is. And then you just fulfill that particular fantasy to the best of your ability. Because if they ask you to contort and your bones just never make that way, you can't do it. But see what it is that your partner really wants and considers romantic and try your very best to fulfill that. So those are the three R's, and I'm going to pause right now and ask you to reflect on whether or not there's anything you could do in your love life right now, COVID-19 specific, because you can't go out, you can't do all the things that you usually enjoy doing, running around, hopscotching to your favorite restaurants, but you're home with your partner and you want to show them that you love them. Could you commit to reflecting on why you're in a relationship with them and read that to them, maybe tomorrow evening as a surprise? Could you write down what the things are that you want to release? So I'll allow you some time to kind of stop and think about what you have to let go if you're going to truly deem the love. And it could mean your own hesitations and hang-ups around what should be appropriate behavior for couples. Maybe you have to release some of that, you know, self-consciousness about how you want to see and what you know what you have to drop if you're going to really deem the love. And if you don't know, you could also ask your partner. But we're going to go into that asking in the conflict resolution component. And then romance. How you feel about that date night at home idea? Could you create a romance jar for you and your partner to surprise each other with varying requests each night? Going to give you some time to think about that and to write it down. No more than a minute. So we're going to set a little timer. So right now, you're looking at reflecting, why are you with the person you're with? What about them makes them the ideal partner? Why do you enjoy them? And you need to always remember this, so when it's conflict time, you can locate the purpose of the relationship so you can deal with the conflict appropriately. What do you need to release and let go of? And romance. Let's talk about what we could do to turn the sexy on in our relationship. So you have a minute, get to it. So let's explore conflict resolution, which is the second half of this entire life lesson for COVID-19 relationships. Now, conflict, and I want you to know that you can use these concepts and these ideas in any relationship you're in. It can be your intimate relationship, it can be your relationship with your family members, your mother, brother, father, sister, friends, children, co-workers, whatever it is. These principles will apply across the board, but for this lesson, just try to locate it in the intimate partner conversations, because that's really the examples that I'm going to be using. So first, we have to establish what conflict is not. When we hear conflict, and if you look for the definitions in the dictionary, conflict suggests pain, harm, war, fight, aggression, opposition, friction, loss. Conflict is not automatically negative or positive. So that's the first thing. And I have that little plus and minus sign. Conflict is not positive or negative. Conflict is what you choose to make it. And unfortunately, much of our culture, if not all of it, reflects and considers that conflict is always going to be negative. So if you and somebody have a conflict, It means I'm not war and things are bad and I'm in trouble and this is danger and somebody have to win and somebody have to lose because we're now in the ring and a dog eat dog, we say. Now, I've said this before, I don't think if I was a dog, I would be eager to eat another dog. So I really can't get the dog eat dog concept of life. But what's important in this talk is that we recognize that conflict is not automatically positive or automatically negative. You get to choose what conflict means for your relationship. So you have to take a deep breath, inhale, exhale, and say to yourself, partner and I are experiencing conflict. This is just one component of our 3-year relationship or our 6-month relationship. This is one experience and one exchange. It does not constitute the entire relationship because some of us in the conflict go, I saw them stay and from your said this to me, you know, really deep down in your heart and I show you true colors. And now you've seen several colors of their personality. Now you're seeing what constitutes maybe red, like a danger color, because you know disagreeing on something and you're recognizing what they don't like or what you don't like about what they do. It's one color in the kaleidoscope and the spectrum of colors that constitutes your partner. Don't think that all conflict is negative or automatically positive either. You have to choose what it means as a single experience in your entire relationship. Now, clearly, if you're having the same conflict over and over and over again, then you have a problem because this is a pattern. And I want to say quickly, when it comes down to issues of physical abuse, and that conflict resolution thing, for Crystal, other people might constitute it as part of conflict resolution, but I don't do that kind of emotional support and guidance and counseling, and that's not my area of expertise. So I don't want you to be in an abusive relationship and thinking that these tips and tools are what I mean you should apply in order to deal with a partner who is putting her hands or his hands on you. You have to recognize the difference between a conflict that can be healthily resolved and one that is really about to cost you your life and your limb. You have to make that decision. So let's not conflate all of those things. And I want to make that clear because I know I have a lot of female members of my community and I don't want to miscommunicate this particular message for you. So it's not automatically positive or negative. The next thing it is not is disruption. So people see conflict as proof that the relationship is breaking down and it's falling apart and arguing and it means that you're not my soulmate anymore and I thought you were the person that was just going to get me and we were going to be in sync and I was going to be the yin and you were going to be the yang and we're just going to fit in together and the fact that we have an argument means that we're no longer yin and yang. Conflict is not disruption. All conflict is an opportunity to clarify. If you and somebody are angry about a particular thing, it means that you both care about that particular thing. So, how can we clarify what we need in this moment, in this situation, so that moving forward, I know what to expect of you, and you know what to expect of me? It is simply an opportunity to clarify. Example, man leaves toilet seat up for the 97,000th time. Woman does not want to say for the 97,000th time that I can fall in the toilet. So I would prefer you put down all of the seat then than to leave this one up. Man can't understand why that is a problem. Man giggles and walks away and says, chop, you make everything bother you. Yeah, just like your last fuse, last straw on the camel's back, and you just chip out. You don't respect me. You don't listen to my voice. Everything I say is taken for a joke. You don't care about what I need. And it's simple to you, but it's important to me. Calm down. Clarify. Why is it important for me to have the seat not left up? Communicate using your words, adults, and say, it's really an inconvenience. It's not a principle for me, but it's really a matter of convenience. So you have to decide what is important about this thing that you're having conflict or conflicting feelings on. And we're gonna break down all of those things, our perception, need, power, principles, and all of that. But I really want you to understand that we're gonna have differences. We're human beings, we're different in how we've experienced life, how we were raised, the principles that we hold there. And so if someone can't explain to you clearly why this particular principle is important to me, why this particular behavior bothers me so much, then your partner is not going to automatically understand why it is bad or why it is good just because you say you don't like it. I am your wife. And if I say I don't like when you speak to her, I don't like it. I'm your husband. And if I say I don't want to have my life, I'm your husband. No, you have to clarify what you need, why it's important to you, and why it's important to the overall health and longevity of your relationship. So let's jump in now to what conflict actually is. So remember, it's not automatically positive or negative. It's not evidence of disruption. It's not proof that your relationship is falling apart. It's not proof that they're no longer your soulmate. It's just an opportunity to clarify. We see this thing differently, or we expected different things. Can we get back on the same page? And if we can, let's get on that same page. So conflict, if you look at the components that are shooting off from what's in here, power, perceptions, needs, and principles are the four components that I want to focus on. But really what conflict is, it's just evidence of diversity. We did not get raised in the same household. We did not get raised by the same parents. We did not get taught the same things as values and principles and ways of being and attitudes and all of those things. It was different. So as I was being raised in my corner of the world, you were also being raised in your corner of the world. And when we meet, what we will find is that we have diverse needs, diverse requests, diverse values, diverse principles. With that said, how do we deal with that need for each of our diversities to be accommodated in the relationship? So, question to self, am I the same person as my partner? No, I'm not. Do I have different needs from my partner? Yes, I do. Do I know what those different needs are? Could be a yes, could be a no. The answer is no, figure that out. Have I communicated those diverse needs and requirements that I have to my partner? Could be yes, could be no. If it is no, communicate that. But accept your diversity. We're coming from different places, different experiences, different upbringing, different values. Some of them are going to be the same, but some will be different. And conflict is simply evidence of diversity along these four quadrants. So it's either diversity in principles. What is it that I think is a principle, not a need, you know, just a value, an ethic, and a principle for me that my partner does not see as a principle? For some persons, it could be who does the child care activities in the home. So for your partner, they may automatically think that as a principle, that's something the woman must do, and the woman must wash, or the woman must clean, or the woman must get up if the baby is crying. And you may have as a different principle that no, child rearing and child care should actually be shared between both of us. No, baby's wah-wah-wah at night, woman is lying down and going, hey, it's your turn. And man goes, are you mad? We must get up out of my bed. You know, say, woman, you don't have to take care of that. This is an example. You can sit back and recognize, oh, whoa, this person are rude to me right now. They don't accept that me need sleep. They don't accept, and you go through the whole motion in your head, and you chip off back on them to let them know that whatever you need to let them know. Or you can say, why is my partner disagreeing with me on this? Why are we having a back and forth on this? What is the principle that is in question here? And you ask, sweetheart, is it that you believe that you should not be doing this? And sweetheart says, yes, my belief said, me nothing do it. And me did grow up and say, my mother do it away here, and my father do it away here, and I saw me ever do it. Okay, so we have different principles or values on this child rearing thing. Didn't ask about it when we just met, but hey, here we are, and we have to get this done. For me, that's an important principle. For you don't share that principle. So you have to ask yourself the question, whoever it is that has the principle or the conflict of principle, is this principle so important that if it's not met for me, the relationship will deteriorate? And if the answer is yes, then you have to sit with your partner and communicate why that particular principle, in your views, is important to the future of the relationship. And ask them if they could also accept the value of that principle. And if they say no, then you say, all right, maybe we will not see eye to eye on this principle, that the man should and the woman should. However, can you assist me in making sure that I get some rest after doing this all day, and then we work with a shift? So it's not that your principle has to change around who has to do the child rearing, because maybe you don't get it so with me right now. But would you accept that I also need sleep? Okay, so can I get some sleep now and you do this, and then you get some sleep and I do it? All right. So it's more likely that you can get to a reasonable resolution of that conflict without each person giving up their principle. Because again, I don't want you to think that conflict is an opportunity for you to win at something or force something down somebody else's throat. You may still end up with different views on an issue, but you design a way forward so that the relationship can be sustained. And maybe that way forward for some families is get a nanny. Because when you want to sleep, I am not going to get up. But the point is, we need somebody to get up when the child is crying. So let's get a nanny. And that allows each person to hold their principle. So I still believe this is a woman thing, and I still believe that this is a shared responsibility. But the future of this relationship requires that somebody has to get up in the middle of the night. So to resolve this particular conflict, I don't need you to change your principle, but we should change our approach to solving this particular problem that has brought principles in conflict. So that's a question of principles. There's also conflict caused out of a diversity of needs. So different people need different things in a relationship. I remember I said needs are things that you think you can't survive without. So at a very base level, we all need communication. We need somebody to talk to us. We need to feel like we're being heard when we're talking. We need to feel like our voice is valued. Basic human requirements. If you can't live without communicating with somebody, your partner has to know that, hey, I'm a communicator, right? I need to talk about my feelings. I need to share these ideas. I need to get this out. And I don't feel like you're listening to me. And every time I talk to you, they're by your phone. So what I'm gonna do, so my need to have a conversation and feel like I'm being listened to is met. But you have to know that you have a need. You can't just get up and say, every time I talk to you, they're by your phone. Every time, I don't attack me. I always ignore you. And then it becomes an argument because the person is saying, but me not ignore you. Me hear you while you talk. I mean, didn't hear when you said that. And I'm not going to say, which is why I'm never contribute. But me, I listen. And you're going, with a male or female, because males nag too. Guys, I know you're honest, like thinking I'm only role playing for women. I'm not. This is across both genders. So you have to also decide whether or not you are clear on what the need is that you have versus saying you are just a bad person, a bad partner for me, you're not carrying you with me, you're not pulling you with me, you're not doing your part. What is the need that you're not seeing being met? Communicate that to your partner and let them understand that when you say, for example, I need to be heard, it means that you have to look at me. Let me feel like you're listening, because when your head is down in the phone, I don't know that you're really hearing me. Say that. Versus boxing the phone off in hand, and then it becomes a match about who can mash up over phone and who can storm out. You can see how that could get very, very old, very, very fast if that's the way that conversation always runs. So, needs. That's also something that is diverse, and you can't take it for granted that people know what you need. There are different tiers of needs in a relationship. Just to address them quickly, have personal needs, things that I need. You have your conflict partner's needs, so your intimate partner, what they need, because they have needs too. Sometimes the need is silence. I don't want to hear anybody. I don't want to talk. But you really need to talk. So I have a personal need, which is in direct conflict with my partner's personal need. So what is the shared need that we have? And then what is the need for the relationship that we have? And then you have to decide how you get to the shared needs and how you get to the relationship's needs. Because sometimes getting to your relationship needs means deciding whether your personal needs is really so important. Is it true that you can't live without it? And you have to also be clear on whether it's a need versus a desire. Because you can't make a desire to have your partner come home early be quoted as a need for have the partner home early. And a lot of people are very skilled at creating that kind of nexus of where were you? I need you to be home so I can feel safe. Why did I answer the phone call? I needed you to answer because I had a burning emergency. It was not a need. It was a desire. It was a preference. It was something that you would have liked. So you can't, because you want to win that conflict and that engagement, merge the need with the desire and pretend that they're both the same thing. No. Remember, your need is something that you absolutely can't survive in the relationship without. So don't try to conflict the two. It is dishonest, and that dishonesty also communicates a level of frivolity to your partner because they won't take you serious. Like, that can't be something that is life or death, that I must answer the phone and the second ring or it means say. So don't conflict the two, or your partner can't take you seriously. The other diverse element of our character as human beings that can also be in conflict is perception. How we perceive ourselves may not be how our partner perceives us. So maybe you're asking a question genuinely. family thinks that you're being mischievous. And so because they think you're being mischievous, they give you a cheeky answer. And if you have a cheeky answer and you are being genuine, you give them back a cheeky answer. And it becomes an exchange of conflict. And conflict is about perception. How you saw yourself is not how your partner saw you. Or how you see your partner is not how your partner sees themselves. Or how each of you see the situation is different and the perception from their angle versus your angle. You're looking at the same thing but seeing two completely different things. For example, raising children, how to discipline a child. You're looking at the question of a child doing something wrong, coming in late from a party, for example. Mother thinks that we must reprimand, beep, drop to the bed, because principles, that's how I was raised, and that's how I was disciplined, and that's how I'm going to discipline my child. Father says, no, I don't believe in that kind of discipline. That is not my principle, and that's not how I was raised. I believe we're going to talk it up, I'm going to send them in the corner, we're going to ground them, or we're going to take away the privileges, and blah, 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 blah. You're now in conflict with each other. You jump over the question of the child coming home late, and that needing to be sorted out. And then start tackling each other about who is the boss and who is the bully and who thinks them know more and who are more parent than who. That comes in a lot for parents. You think you have more mother than oh, me a father? You think you have more father than oh, me a mother? Whatever. And then you guys start to go to war with each other around principles and perceptions of discipline and who wants to win the war of how to discipline the child. So in terms of clarifying those perceptions, you have to ask yourself, is there a value or a need in conflict here? No, I don't have a need to sanction the child. If I don't sanction the child, I can survive. So it's not a need. What is it? It's a principle. My principle is you have to bend the tree from it young. And if you make the child get away with this, then the child is going to take drugs later on. Is that principle something that the life of the relationship depends on? Not really, but it's a preference I have around how to deal with it. All right, so if the relationship won't die unless I get my way, how can I establish something that is good for the relationship without feeling like I am losing some personal power? So for example, you could ask your partner, all right, if we're not going to hit the child, what do you think would communicate appropriately that what they did was wrong? And allow them to also become a partner in deciding how to reprimand the child. Because remember, it's our child. And the partner is right. You're not more of a parent than they are a parent. So let us come to a place of understanding about what would be appropriate to get the result we want, which is so that the child doesn't come in late again. That could be locking the door automatically at a particular time. That could be setting a tracker on the car so you always know where the child is. And if you're not on their way home at a particular time, you can go meet the car somewhere on the road. What is the actual outcome you're trying to get to that would prevent you and the partner from going to blows verbally around the appropriate way to discipline the child? So always focus on the result that you want in the relationship and the value of this conflict in the overall long-term state of the relationship before deciding that you don't want me to be a hearing and you don't value my voice and da 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 da. Take breath. Is there a value that's in conflict? Is there a need that's in conflict? Is there a way for us to settle this without me feeling like I have lost, but that the problem is actually solved? And if the answer is yes, and it most often is, work together, collaborate on a solution. So that's just an example of how perception can affect how we see a conflict, because the person is seeing it from their side, and we're seeing it from our side. Sometimes you also have to ask yourself, if I were in their shoe, my parents did not beat me when I was growing up, but here I am now being asked to watch someone beat my child. How would I feel? And then you can decide appropriately how to respond. So versus saying that you always want the upper hand, you could say, I understand that the way you were brought up, you had no experience with this, and so it makes you feel uncomfortable. And for you, it feels like X or Y. Where I'm coming from is that this works, and it sets barriers, and da da da. And decide if there's a way for you to help set some barriers, and this other partner can reach a space of disciplining the child without violating values and principles that they hold there. The other question is a diversity of powers. In a lot of relationships, in every relationship, there's a power dynamic. Some days some persons will have more power, and some days somebody else will have more power. You have to decide, first of all, self-perception. Depending on the self-image you have of yourself, you will give up a lot of personal power in order to feel accepted and to prove that you love your partner. And I find too many persons in relationships do this. And it's a part of avoiding dealing with conflict. So instead of saying, no, let's talk this through, because I don't think you understood what I said, and I don't think you heard what my real concern was, you just kind of blew it over because your voice is louder than mine, or you just kind of ignored me because you screamed at the top of your voice and thought that when you screamed out with a bad word, I was going to stop. But I need you to hear what I'm saying. This is the problem I have. And while I don't want to argue or continue the argument, I do want us to clarify so you can understand what the problem is, so we don't get back here another time. Push for that conversation and that clarity. And again, remember I said it at the top, if you've noticed a pattern in behavior, conflict resolution skills between you and them in the house alone can't get you to where you need to get to. But we're talking about instances now that might pop up while you're at home with your partner, and you just never knew that they thought this, or they enjoyed these things, or they thought this was funny when you think it's serious. I know you're wondering if you married the right person. Take a breath and ask yourself, what is it that's diverse here that's causing us to not be in sync, and how can we get back on the same page? And it's a question of power. First, ask yourself, have I given up a sense of personal power here? Have I made this person feel that I don't want to have a voice, or I don't want to participate in decision making, and so they're trying to make all my decisions for me? Where did I begin to facilitate this abuse of the shared power that we should have? And then you also have to decide, and we'll talk about that later on, whether it is a particular type of power that you're facilitating while you're resolving conflict, because that's also important. But you have to know if it's a question of power dynamics here. Is it because your partner is male and you are female? Is it because your partner earns more than you and you earn so little bit you feel like you mustn't say anything, and so you just let things fly and then build up a lot of resentment? Coming back here, you can't properly deal with conflict if you're carrying around a lot of bad feelings. But having established what the conflict is, which is diversity, diversity in principles, diversity in needs, diversity in perception, diversity in power, you have to then identify when a conflict arises, which of these fits into that conflict matrix. What are we in conflict about? And then the do's and the do nots around conflict resolution. So let's start with the things that you do not want to do. You don't want to conquer. Too many of us are in conflicting situations and get into conflict with our intimate partner, and the goal that we have is to win the cuss out. Are you meant to talk to? You know I'm talking to you. Your goal is to win. And because you're so focused on winning, you don't end up solving the real problem. And that problem keeps coming up over and over again. And whoever can win, just win and you move on. And the conflict is not resolved in a way that builds the relationship. So you're not in the argument to win it. Don't say, oh, I forget one more point. Don't walk off an argument and say, but just remember someone could have said this and I never said it. It's not about winning. It's about resolving the conflict in a way that builds the relationship for the future of that relationship. Another do not avoid. A lot of us are avoiding conflict because we're not so confident about how it's going to look or feel when it's resolved. And if you tackle this particular principle, this value, this need, talk about this question of power, you feel like the relationship might disintegrate. You feel like you don't have the skills to properly resolve that conflict. And so you just leave it alone. Like, I don't want to be confrontational. I don't know how this is going to end. I'm not so sure how they're going to feel, what they're going to think, what I'm going to say. So I'm just going to leave it alone and let's just smile and hug up and take some pictures or go in the bedroom and just have a romp in the shop, and that's fine. No. If you keep avoiding it, it keeps coming back. And if it's not properly resolved, you're going to build up that fantastic thing we call resentment that you have to release if you're going to resolve a conflict. So stop avoiding conversations that are hard and difficult. Do not avoid it. You have to address and approach in a smart way. And we'll cover those steps around how to approach and resolve conflict in a healthy way. The other thing you don't want to do is bargain. So a lot of people come to the table to resolve conflict and think that it's a bargaining game. So I don't like A, B, C, and D. You don't like A, B, C, and D. All right, suppose I stop with A and B. You stop with C and D? Yeah, all right, conflict resolved. No. And we have that misconception that if I give up this and you give up that, we're all going to be happy, hunky-dory, and the conflict will not happen again. No, if you're giving up something that you consider a principle, if you give up something that you consider a need, eventually you're going to start feeling unfulfilled in your relationship and unhappy. And you're going to take it out on your partner. So, example. Partner said, I don't like when your best friend is a girl, you know. If me stop the A, you will stop your friend there? And you say, yeah. How long before you start missing your best friend? How long before you start resenting your partner for stopping you from being friends with who you want to be friends with? Like a good friend. That there was nothing untoward about the relationship, but you didn't want your partner to stop with something, so you just give up on hurting them so that they can give up another something. And you slowly start to disintegrate parts of you that you need to survive. Remember, needs are things you don't think you can do without. Partner said, what? But I believe in a God. Stop God church. Alright? If me stop God church, you ever stop with something? Yeah. Bam. Me stop God church and you stop with that. But if you need a relationship with your creator, at some point you're going to feel resentment and feel anger and feel sadness and feel guilt and feel all kinds of things that will come out in other ways. And because you're not addressing the things in ways that you need to address them, you bottle it up, hide it inside, it went squeeze out somewhere in your body, you know, somewhere it went come out. Either when you roll your eye, the tone of your voice, the way you're looking at the person, it's going to come out. So don't try to bargain away the things that you actually need, and don't think that a conflict is properly resolved based on how many things a person give up on. Alright, me stop this and you stop that. Mm-hmm. Establish what is the value in conflict. What's the principle in conflict? What's the need in conflict? What's the issue with power here? What is it that we need to truly talk about and clarify so that we understand the challenge that each of us is facing, and then take the steps to prevent that particular challenge coming back? Or, because I want you to know, there are times when a conflict is resolved and it doesn't mean that both of you have agreed to the particular value or principle. But what you have agreed to is that this dispute is not enough for me to throw away my relationship. So while I will continue to be a Christian and you will continue to be a Muslim, it doesn't mean that I think it is okay for you to be a Christian or for you to be a Muslim. But this question of which God we pray to and what we call him and what biblical text we read is not so big a deal for me to not want to come home to you at night. So again, don't think that conflict resolution means that all of a sudden we're on the same page, believing the same things, wanting the same things, and happily skipping down the yellow brick road. And then the final thing I want you to not do is role play. You see this thing about I am the wife and I am the husband, I am the man in the house, I am the woman of the house, I am the parent, I am the dad, and that's why you should do this. Me are the breadwinner, me put food on the table, me the, that's why you should do this. Role playing is not a healthy way of resolving a conflict, because what you do is hide behind the role. So let's use a parent example. I am your mother, and if I say you must go to your bed at 9 o'clock, you must go to your bed at 9 o'clock, don't ask no questions. That doesn't resolve the conflict. I want to stay up for 9:30 because there's this thing I need to watch. So how is it that you needing me to go to my bed at 9 o'clock overrides my need to watch this thing? You have to explain that. Come out of the role that you're playing and say, listen, you have to get 8 hours sleep for your brain to work, and I plan to wake you up at 5 o'clock. So you have to go to sleep at 9 o'clock so you can get 8 hours of sleep, because I can't move your wake up time to 6, or you're going to miss the bus, or you're going to miss the taxi, or you're going to be traffic on the road. Talk through what is in conflict and don't hide behind the role. I am the man and I say so. I am the woman and I say so. I am the parent and I say so. I am the this and I say so. Don't hide behind your role. That builds up resentment as well, and it doesn't clarify to the person what it means. And you're also communicating to children, for example, how they should handle conflict in the future. So your child goes to school, ends up in a dispute with somebody, and then asks, so why do you think you were right? Or why did you take it this way? Because me in upper school and them in a lower school. Because I'm the male and she's the female. Because I'm the prefect and this one is not a prefect. And that doesn't clarify conflict. So also be careful about what lessons you're communicating to your children as they are observing you, an intimate partner, resolving or failing to properly resolve conflict, especially using this role play cop-out of it is so because I say so. Mm-mm. That can't be the route you take. But we do have a strategy and a solution around what you can do. So the first thing you want to do is to create the right atmosphere for conflict resolution. You can't resolve a conflict out of road in front of everybody, and you can't do it if you don't have the time to properly focus and listen to your partner. So you can't resolve a conflict in rushing haste on your way through the door. All right, cool, I get it. Yeah, man, don't happen again. Mm-hmm. Pick the appropriate time and the appropriate place that works for both of you. So it can be a good time for you and a bad time for them, a good place for you and a bad place for them. Example, let's use a workplace example. When employees and employers have a conflict and the employer says, all right, come, meet me in the conference room, we're gonna have a talk about this and see if we can resolve it. Employee goes into this conference room, feels intimidated in the conference room, with this whole picture of CEO, HR, this, that, who have power, who have status, who have influence, who have control. They begin to feel small because they're not in a place that makes them feel personal, positive power. And so they begin to cower. They bring me to this nice fancy conference room. I'm not doing nothing about them space and I feel uncomfortable. I just work on the factory floor and now you bring me to the AC executive space. I'm in your place of power. And it's not a good place for me to be honest about how I feel and to properly communicate how I think a conflict would be best resolved. And so I just recoil. And anything you say goes because I'm really on your playground or on your battlefield of choice. So what you need to do is find some place that is neutral. So don't try to resolve the conflict with the person at their mother yard or at their father yard or out in their best friend backyard or in the car with other people there for them to feel under pressure to say or not say something. So pick the right place, pick the right time. And then the second thing I want you to do is move to clarify. Ask questions. Hey there, you said this. Hi love, you did this. Darling, I don't think that this particular value was recognized. You probably didn't think that this was important for me. Oh, what happened?
Oh,
share
story.
Yes, I ran out of time. 3,000.
And that's all we have for you for this episode of Good Guest Mondays. It's been a pleasure having you as part of our community. I really hope that the tools we've shared in this episode will help you and your intimate partner to better navigate conflict, especially in this time, courtesy of the COVID-19 restrictions. I'm Christelle Tomlinson, reminding you to share this with your community. If there is a friend, a couple in your network, a WhatsApp group that has husbands, wives, intimate partners who you know would find this useful, or maybe you could share it with your entire social network. You know who needs to hear this. And if you're not sure, you can always ask if they would find this valuable. So click share and make sure someone who needs this tool has it available. And if you haven't already, remember to stop and give us a rating or comment on this particular episode so we know if this is of value to you. Thank you so much. And I'm sending you lots of energies of love, peace, clarity, and synergy between you and the one you love. Blessings.
The second thing you want to do is clarify. Ask questions. Be clear about what your partner is perceiving, what their needs are, what their principles are that they feel like are in conflict, and what it is that has offended them so much. Don't assume that you know what your partner is upset about. You don't know. Always tell yourself that you just don't know. So you have to ask, why are you so upset about me driving your car today? I mean, I always drive it. Why was today such a big deal for you? And let them say, I left a flash drive in there that I needed for work. And you didn't even tell me you were going, so I could have taken the flash drive out. And that really irritated me. So instead of assuming that, oh, you know, I'm driving, I feel like, yeah, before you get there, ask, why were you upset about me driving the car? Before you assume that they don't want to touch them things, the coffee them things, after them things. Ask. Clarify. And you would be amazed how much you learn about the other person just by asking, why does this make you angry? Why are you upset about this thing? Explain it to me because I'm not sure. And even as you're clarifying, ask clarifying questions. So actively listen, say, so from what you're saying, I'm getting A and B and C. Is that correct? That's what you're saying? Versus saying, I'm listening to the person and you go, oh, so what you said is that. And then they go, no, that's not what I'm saying. Are you even listening to me? And then you're going to hold argument again around who's hearing but not listening and who is listening with an agenda. And ask genuinely clarifying questions. What you're saying is A and B and C. So I'm understanding that A and B and C. Is that correct? Am I understanding the right thing here? And let them clarify. The other thing I want you to explore as I do. So you set the atmosphere, right time, right place. Clarify, what is it about this thing that, you know, is making me so upset? I don't understand. Tell me, explain it, break it down for me. I want to understand. Is this what you mean when you said bam, bam, bam? And then establish what the needs are at that point. So after they've clarified what it is that has bothered them, then you ask, what do you need right now? What do you need right now out of this exchange? to feel like we have solved your problem. Because I know our problem, you know. I remember, it's not every time the other person have a conflict, it means that both of you have an issue. Sometimes you're just responding to their response or their red flag to say you're having a problem, but you don't really have a problem. You just know that when people talk to you a certain way and say just answer back a certain way, but you don't really have a need at that point. You just need to respond in kind, that you diss me, I don't miss you back. No. So right now, I don't have a need. I don't have anything in conflict. There's nothing that I need that I'm not getting. So tell me why you said this and did this in this way. What is it that you will need to feel like this conflict is properly resolved or that your needs are being met in this resolution of the issue? But you also have to determine what you need. So when you realize that the conflict is getting out of hand, you say, what do I need? At this point, I'm in this exchange with my partner. What do I need out of this? Sometimes you just need to get something off your chest. Like there's no big principle behind it. But you just vex from in the lake or somebody hit your car and drive off. You just need to get some rage off your chest. You just need to vent. So it's not even your partner. You just need an outlet to vent. That's all I need. Somebody who I can vent to and say that. Say, sweetheart, I'm not upset with you now. I just need somewhere to vent. Also ask yourself, what does the relationship need? At this point, understanding where we are in our intimacy, what would be good for the relationship right now? Okay, so if this is good for the relationship and I do it, do I feel like I am losing or do I feel like I'm empowering the person and empowering the relationship? If you feel like you're losing, don't do it. You have to go back into yourself now and clarify your personal perceptions, your personal self-image, your personal needs in a relationship. You have to dig inside yourself. If you feel like by giving your relationship what it needs or giving your partner what they need, you're losing, don't do it. Jump back in yourself and establish why you feel like I'm losing. Is there a value that is in conflict? Is there a principle that I'm being asked to compromise? Is there a need I have that I can't live without that I'm being asked to give up? I can't give up this need. Or no, but just feel a way today. Go back into yourself and clarify that before you decide if you're willing to give this thing to your partner that your partner needs or give this thing to the relationship that the relationship needs. And then the final thing is around positive power. Now, this is really important for conflict. We are trained to think, just like with conflict, that power is an aggressive and, you know, vengeful thing, and it means being an aggressor, and it means being in charge, and being like, and you're not powerful if you're not like, that's not true. There's positive power and there's negative power. Negative power is power over. So there are partners who love that exercise of power over somebody else, power over something. It's probably a part of the principles they were raised with, what they saw in their homes, and what they think male power should look like. So it must mean dominating, or what they think female power should look like. It must mean me taking a check from the body, and I'm my own boss, and I'm an independent woman, and I'm dancing the song, and I saw me feel. Because of how you view power as a negative thing, power over, it means that you're not willing to share it. It means that you're not willing to open up the power room and let somebody else in, because you feel like if they have power, I am weaker. If they can decide, me no longer have no power, so I can't even put it aside. I must always choose, I must always be right. If they are right all the time and I am wrong, it means I'm weak. And if I give up something and they get something, then I'm something over me. That's a perception of negative power. So be careful if you're inside conflict and trying to figure out how you can conquer, how you can win, how you can get an edge, get an advantage. It's also a concept called seesaw power. So if I am up, you have to be down. So we can't up together. The seesaw and the work so. So if me want up, you have to down. And any day we see that you go up, it means that I am going down. And that's dangerous for the relationship. Check yourself. Is that your perception of power? Because if it is, it means that your perception is centered on negative power. Positive power, however, is focused on power with. So we're in a relationship together, a partnership together. There's no seesaw. We're actually equals, balanced on this playing field called life. I'm learning, you're learning. I'm growing, you're growing. There are lessons in this for me, there are lessons in this for you. We are diverse. We do things differently. We want different things. We value different things. We're raised differently. So there's no wrong or right. I come in this as me. you coming to this as you, and we're trying to figure out how we can build a little rhythm and move in the same direction. Now, if you establish that, we just not going to ever head in the same direction, then you part ways. But so long as we believe that we can get to this destination together, that we have plotted and we have planned, then figure out how you're going to share some power in deciding how we get there. So some days, the parma will suggest a bicycle because I believe in ecotourism and doing what's best for the environment and being friendly to Mother Nature and less emissions and less this and less that. And then some days, as much as you feel like you're at one with Mother Earth, you will have to share that power and allow your partner to decide some of the time that we're going to drive a car, that we're going to take a train, that we're going to take a plane. Because, and ask yourself this, what do I need in this relationship? Is the need to ride a bicycle so important that I don't want to come home to this person anymore? What do I need in this relationship? Is the need to see the world so important that I don't want to build life with this person anymore? And if the answer is yes, then you go on and pursue your needs because you're accepting that I can't have this need and be in this relationship with you. And I'm not willing to give up this need, so gotta give you up. But, I don't know if you understand already, but it should be clear by now, if you don't know what you want, there is no way to locate those needs when conflict of needs arise. So, look at how you can build and share positive power, which is power with. Opening the door for each of us to make a decision around what we want to do. Let's use an example again for parenting. So let's say there's something that we want to do related to children. Again, it could be a same dispute about how we discipline the child or what we want for the child, whatever it is. But we are coming to blows about it and we start tackling each other. You know, I am this and that, and we're just in conflict and we're quarreling and we can't get along, I can't see eye to eye. What is this thing that we need? What do I need? What does my partner need? What does the relationship need? And if you still can't find any synergy, what you can ask yourself is, what are our shared needs? So it's something that both of us need together. And when it comes down to parenting, one of those shared needs automatically is, I want to set a good example for my child. So while my need to do this and your need to do that are in direct conflict, one of the things we do share is that we want to set a good example for our children. So if we want to meet that need, there's some things that we have to do differently, or we're not going to set a good example for our children. So can we agree to going to counseling, doing some courses around anger management, whatever it is. You can explore what those next steps need to be. But if you can't identify how your personal need can be met, how your partner's needs can be met, how the relationship's needs can be met, then you can ask, well, what needs do we share right now? What is the thing that we both want together? And how can we act in a way that gets us that together? So I hope this has been helpful for you. We walked through the 3 R's around how you can deeply love in your relationship, reflecting on why you're with the person in the first place. So you can remember why you're in love and why this relationship is important. Releasing the things, the hang-ups, the unforgiveness, the tension, the resentment that you've allowed to build up. And there are different ways that you can do that, literally by writing on a piece of paper and burning it, putting it in a bottle and making it sail out to sea, let it go away with the wind, bury it in the dirt, whatever you want to do, find a way to release that, to open up a space of love, because you can't store love and hate in the same place. They don't gel. So you have to let one out in order to fill the space with another, because each of them is consuming. Love is consuming and hate is consuming, and they can't consume together. So whatever is there first is likely to win because it would have consumed that space already. Romance. What are some of the things you can do? One of the things I suggested was a date night. Even though you're at home right now, maybe there's some things that you can do while at home to be romantic and to deepen that bond and connection. And the romance jar. Something fun and interesting. Writing what your romantic fantasies are. Drop them in a jar. And each night or every date night, you choose how frequent, dip in, pick out something, surprise the other person with that fantasy or that desire. And again, these things can be something like rubbing their feet or, you know, vacuuming the house or something, cooking dinner, cooking breakfast. It doesn't always have to be something sexual because there are different people who have different love languages, as I spoke about earlier. What is conflict not? Conflict is not positive or negative. You can determine what conflict is. It's also not a disruption. It is simply an opportunity to clarify. So when you and somebody are in conflict about something, it means that when you feel some kind of way about the issue at hand. Both of you care about that issue, and that's why there is some conflict. So since we both care about this thing, let's clarify. What is at play here? What is this diversity of opinion, whether it's principles, needs, perception, power? What is it that we're not on the same page with? And how can we get on the same page? What do I need? What do you need? What does the relationship need? What are the things that we share as a need? And how can we center on those important things? And determine if, whether or not those needs can be met, is the relationship still worth pursuing? If it is, pursue it. If it's not, then you know what to do. Do not seek to conquer in a conflict. It's not a win or lose, not a zero-sum game. It's something that allows each person to experience growth and build the relationship for the long term. Remember, it's about building the relationship. It's not about who can register the most wins. Like every time I'm arguing to get your way, and every time it's not you always win, and every time it's always in a way that not keeping score, not trying to win. We're trying to build a relationship, and relationships can't be built on a conquered and conqueror kind of basis. You can't avoid the conflict either. No matter how much you ignore it, it's going to find a way to come back out. Bottling it up, pretending it doesn't matter, doesn't work. So you have to find a way to deal with the conflict. And if you need a mediator, if you need a third person because you don't trust that you have the skills to deal with it, go and find a mediator. Don't take it for granted that because you love the person, you know how to solve all conflicts. Sometimes you need a little additional help, and you must know when you need the help to go and reach for it. Don't bargain. Resolving conflict doesn't mean I give up something, you give up something, and yay, we win-win because you give up two things and I give up two things. Oh, hold on. You only give up one and I give up two. Unfair. You win. You need to give up one more. I'm not trying to bargain. You're trying to establish what needs you have as an individual and whether or not these are being fulfilled in the relationship. If they're not being fulfilled, communicate that. If you have communicated that it's still not being fulfilled, determine whether or not that need is so important as to jeopardize the relationship. If it is, get a third person. If it is not, move on. Get on the same page and don't keep holding on to something just because. Role play. Don't just say something must go so because I am the woman and this is something me know. Me know which chicken to buy. Me know what. I am the man and the family says so, this is how it go. Me know all land, know all work. Me know all fix the aisle. No. Talk through whatever is a conflict and don't hide behind your roles. That's lazy and that's the easy way out. But what do you do? Create the appropriate atmosphere. Clarify. Ask. Is this what you mean? Is this what you said? Is this what I'm understanding properly? I don't want to assume. I want to be clear. I want to make sure I understand so this does not happen again. Needs. What are my needs? What are your needs? What are the relationship's needs? What are she needs? What do we need? And needs are things we can't live without. So don't conflate your needs and your desires. It's disingenuous. It's dishonest. It's misleading and it's irritating to pretend that you need something that you really just want. And after a while, it builds a sense of distrust. So don't fuel distrust by lying and saying you need something that you really don't. And build positive power. Not power over, power with. So I'm not trying to win, I'm not trying to conquer, I'm not trying to dominate. I'm trying to see how we can work together to build our relationship. So what can we do together to improve our relationship?